Welcome to Simple Living Works, episode 47. I'm Jerry Iverson. It's my pleasure to be your host with my guest, Susan Stevenson, Executive Director of Interfaith Power and Light. If you're new to this podcast and would like more basic information about Simple Living Works, please listen clear to the end. If you're a regular, you may want to say goodbye at my cue after the interview. Interfaith Power and Light, a religious response to global warming. America's faith communities lead the way on slashing climate pollution. For example, the Cool Congregations Challenge and Take the Paris Pledge, which refers, of course, to the environmental conference coming up in Paris. The mission of Interfaith Power and Light is to be faithful stewards of creation by responding to global warming through the promotion of energy conservation, energy efficiency, and renewable energy. This campaign intends to protect the Earth's ecosystems, safeguard the health of all creation, and ensure sufficient, sustainable energy for all. Interfaith Power and Light is a sterling example of the life standard from Living More with Less, Cherish the Natural Order. President and founder of Interfaith Power and Light, the Reverend Canon Sally G. Bingham, is lead author of Love God, Heal Earth, and recipient of Audubon Society's Rachel Carson Award for her environmental leadership. Susan Stevenson oversees the Regeneration Project and its Interfaith Power and Light campaign. Susan has over 15 years' experience developing and implementing issue advocacy and electoral campaigns for environmental and other public interest organizations. Prior to joining the Regeneration Project, she served as vice president of the Oakland-based campaign consulting firm The Next Generation. Beginning in 1999, she organized and coordinated the California Global Warming Campaign, which implemented a proactive strategy resulting in several landmark legislative victories. She has been involved with California Interfaith Power and Light since its inception in 2000. I have to tell you a humorous story. One of my commitments is to wear a message shirt whenever I'm in public. And I have probably a couple of dozen. And sometimes when I go out, I pick several and let my wife be the final decider of which one I'm going to wear. And without fail, if given the choice, she picks Interfaith Power and Light shirt.
Excellent. Good woman.
Yes. Well, it's a beautiful shirt, and it's subdued. It's not quite as, you know, in your face as my WikiLeaks shirt, you know, those kinds of things. So I'm very fond of the organization, support it, and I'm just really delighted to be speaking to you. Now, if you would, Interfaith Power and Light may not be familiar to everyone listening. So if you would give us just a brief history. I know it started in San Francisco with the Grace Cathedral. Maybe connect some of the dots for us and bring us up to date for the last decade.
Sure. And first of all, I want to say thank you for having me on this show. I really appreciate and honor the mission, and I've listened to a lot of your shows, and they're very, very inspiring and helpful as we all aim to live simpler and better and gentler on the planet. But Interfaith Power and Light has started 15 years ago. So we are now we're going to be celebrating our 15th anniversary at the end of the year. We got our start, it's true, out of the Episcopal Church in Grace Cathedral, even more than 15 years ago, when we were just an Episcopal Church project called Episcopal Power and Light. And Reverend Sally Bingham, our founder at the time, was very focused on taking advantage of the opportunity that we had in the 90s in California to choose green energy. And that's what the project was focused on in the Episcopal Church, was getting Episcopal churches to switch over from PG&E or whatever their regular utility was to one of the green energy providers that were offering services in the state. So that's how we got started. And then around the year 2000, you and your listeners might recall that California had a kind of a major energy crisis thanks to a lot of, turns out, a lot of manipulation of the market by big companies like Enron. But due to that, energy prices skyrocketed, and all of the green energy providers basically couldn't operate in the state, left the state. So Sally Bingham, our founder, was left with about all of these dozens of Episcopal churches that she had convinced to switch to clean energy that were now automatically switched back to dirty energy. So we wanted to do something about that and offer people another option to be good stewards of energy. And I started working together with Sally and others, and we expanded the project to make it interfaith in California, and we had as our first focus energy conservation and energy efficiency. And from there, we started building a network of hundreds of congregations of all faiths all over California, and also began working on advocating for renewable energy and climate legislation, resulting in some landmark laws to address climate change and expedite renewable energy here in California.
Excellent. Now, I've also heard the name the Regeneration Project. So would you please explain to us how the Regeneration Project fits in with Interfaith Power and Light?
Sure.
I hear Interfaith Power and Light called a campaign.
Yes, and so the Regeneration Project is kind of our umbrella, our 501c3. If you know tax code, that's a tax code for a nonprofit organization. And the Regeneration Project has a more broad mission to deepen the connection between ecology and faith. So that is an organization that kind of has a bigger and broader mission, but our campaign right now, and our only campaign, is Interfaith Power and Light, which is specifically to mobilize a religious response to global warming, which we see as the moral crisis of our time. So we are 100% focused on that now, and that is Interfaith Power and Light. And as I said, we started in California, but we now have affiliates in 40 states around the country.
Excellent. And I noticed that you have a lot of resources that are available for congregations and also for individuals. Some of them are by Sally Bingham, and you also have blogs by your state affiliates and individuals.
We do. We have lots and lots of resources on our website. If anyone is interested in perusing it, have in mind whether you're looking for resources for your congregation or for you personally in your household. We do have both. We have a lot geared towards houses of worship, from everything from sample sermons to a carbon footprint calculator created just for congregations. We also have programs like Cool Congregations, which you can join by having your congregation take action on energy, on using energy more efficiently, and it can expand all the way into your grounds. So we have a category under Cool Congregations for grounds and water, really recognizing the impact that land use and water use has on climate change. We also have resources for food choices and how to choose wisely when your congregation or you and your household are having an event involving food, which is most of the events we have involve food in some way. And as it happens, food and the food industry creates almost 30% of global greenhouse gas emissions. So that's an important sector to consider, too. So we try to provide a broad variety of resources on our site for individuals of faith and also congregations.
Now, when you say interfaith, I assume you really mean interfaith. This is not just various Christian denominations.
Absolutely. We have many Jewish congregations. We have Buddhist, Hindu, Muslim, In fact, all the way back to our founding 15 years ago, we had Christians as well as Jewish organizations at the founding. Christian, Catholic, Protestant, Catholic, many different Christian denominations, Jewish, Muslim, Unitarian Universalist, Buddhist, Hindu, just about all the major faith traditions are represented in our network.
Now, Sally Bingham is an Episcopal priest, I understand, but she's also the canon for the environment for the Episcopal Diocese of California. She's also the founder, but also the president of the board. She's kind of the person that we think of. She's the one identified with the organization. I get the impression that she's the one that's really out there making the bigger waves with the in the public media.
Yeah. She is definitely a high-profile individual and has become really one of the leading voices nationally for faith community action on climate change and really linking the climate crisis to a spiritual and moral crisis. So I think she's had a lot of influence. She was one of the only voices out there 20 years ago making these connections, but we do have many more people now, including, we're very excited about the Pope's encyclical to be out next week, which will, we believe, we understand from reports, will most likely specifically address climate change as an issue that people of faith and goodwill must address.
Yes, we're looking forward to that very much. Now, you have a really impressive staff, some just wonderful people. When I'm back in Iowa, we had the Interfaith Power and Light state representative of Iowa, who is also a graduate of Luther College at that time, come to our Lutheran church and speak to us. And so that was a good event for us. But I'm glad to hear that there are, you know, lots of people working. But I'm always flabbergasted how hard it is to get churches to move. For example, you know, my wife and I have put solar panels on our house. They were relatively inexpensive. All we do now is pay PG&E $3 a month for our meter. And yet, when I go to talk to churches, I say, look, price is no longer an issue. Solar panels, either whether they're leased or purchased, are so inexpensive that that's no longer an argument not to have them. What seems to be the major holdups?
Well, I think... first of all, I am very encouraged in the movement in the past couple of years. We've had many dozens of congregations add solar to their facilities, and we've got a long list of them. So that is very encouraging. But I think that congregations, kind of like any small business, you know, sometimes can be can have processes that make things take longer, and especially when we have boards and we have presbyteries, we have different entities that we need to go through or somehow get approval from. I think that can make things take longer, but overall, I think there is good movement in that direction.
Now, Interfaith Power and Light sounds like a progressive organization. So, are you getting much involvement from the conservatives and the fundamentalists?
We have some evangelicals as part of our network, definitely. You know, I would say they're not the largest segment of our network, but they have been coming on board. I think there is a much higher priority given to environmental issues amongst younger evangelical Christians. We have been very encouraged by the passion of some of the evangelical leaders that have come on board and want to work on these issues in their faith. There are some evangelicals, as well as some Catholics who tend to want to work more within their own faith tradition rather than work interfaith, which is fine if that's the way they feel more comfortable working, and we always offer our resources to them, whether or not they want to work with people of other faith traditions directly.
I have to betray a bias to you, Susan, because I'm a rostered leader of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, the ELCA, which is the largest Lutheran denomination and one of the largest denominations in the U.S. And but we are one of the most progressive denominations as well, and so we don't take lightly to conservatives and fundamentalists co-opting the term evangelical. Evangelical for us, you know, means preaching the good news. And so that's just betraying a little bias on my part.
Well, that's right. That's a good point.
Give me the 5-year plan for Interfaith Power and Light. Is it more of the same, or is there something coming up that that you might want to preview?
Sure. Well, I'll just tell you first, if I could tell you a little bit about this year and why we're in such an important moment right now in the movement to address global climate change. As I mentioned before, the Pope Francis is coming out with an encyclical next week, which is a teaching that will be addressed to the bishop, Catholic bishops and all people of goodwill who want to hear his message on why we, as people of faith and goodwill, and particularly Catholics, in his encyclical, need to address climate change. It is impacting the least among us, first and worst, as we sometimes say. That means vulnerable people here in the United States, low-income communities, vulnerable people around the world. The poor are really on the front lines of the impacts of global warming and also of carbon pollution. 7 million people a year die because of air pollution, and that's not even including climate impacts. So there's many urgent reasons to act to protect creation, and not least of them is human lives and human health. So that is going to be, we believe, a very impactful statement that will directly mobilize many of the over a billion Catholics in the world to rally to this cause. We've also heard comments from the highest level of the United Nations say that they believe the Pope's encyclical will have a major impact on the Paris climate negotiations at the end of this year. So we are working hard also to bring a strong message to Paris at the end of the year, COP21, that is a conference of the parties, the 21st conference of the parties to address climate change, will bring nations of the world together in Paris for 2 weeks at the end of 2015 to try to hammer out a meaningful global agreement to curb greenhouse gas emissions and to keep global warming under 2 degrees Celsius. So there's some very important things going on this year. And here in the U.S., we're also anticipating the Clean Power Plan that will be released out of the EPA, the final rules to finally, for the first time, put limits on how much carbon pollution our power plants in the United States can release. We've never, believe it or not, never had a limit on carbon pollution from power plants. So that will be coming out in August or September. And we want to make sure that those rules are well received, that faith community is out visibly supporting those rules, because unfortunately the opponents are already mobilizing against them. So it's a very important year here in the United States, in the faith community, and globally, internationally, with these opportunities to address climate change. What we're doing right now is asking congregations, and any of your listeners, individuals, can do this too. We're particularly reaching out to congregations to sign something called the Paris Pledge, and it's at parispledge.org. And that will commit you and your congregation to cutting your carbon pollution in half by 2030 with a goal of being 100% renewable or carbon neutral by 2050. And these are the kinds of goals that we want to see global leaders moving towards in Paris at the end of the year. And we believe those goals are necessary. Scientists have told us we need reductions on that order and that quickly if we are to avoid global warming more than 2 degrees Celsius, which will bring catastrophic impacts. So we want to lead by example and show that the United States faith community is prepared to take on these goals. And we've started to do so already. We have congregations that are carbon neutral. We even have congregations that are carbon negative. They're producing more renewable energy than they're using. So they're having an overall positive effect on global warming. And that's the kind of thing we really want to see and amplify and multiply. And we're working hard on that this year because the end of the year in Paris is so important. And in terms of the next few years, I think what you'll see from us is more and more of a focus on moving towards 100% clean energy. We believe it's possible now with the technology we have to dump fossil fuels. Given the damage that we've done to the environment to date and the economic advantages that we're now seeing of renewable energy, there's really no reason to continue burning fossil fuels. So we'll be moving more and more towards 100% renewable energy and supporting our congregations in doing that wherever possible.
Oh, that is indeed encouraging. But I don't mean to split hairs, Susan, but it sounds to me like this is a lobbying organization when you get into, you know, public policy. So if people decide to donate to Interfaith Powerlight, are their donations tax deductible?
They are. Thanks for bringing that up. We are 501c3, and that means donations are tax deductible. And 501c3s like your church or like the YMCA or like the art museum are allowed to do a certain portion of a small portion of their budget on lobbying, and that means advocating for specific legislation or against specific legislation. We just can't do it over about 20% of our budget. At that point, we would become not a tax-deductible organization, but we're pretty far from that. Interfaith Power and Light, because we have so many other programs that we do, the lobbying, even though public policy is very important, and we know that our congregations alone, even if we were to green all 300,000 houses of worship in this country, we still wouldn't be able to achieve what we need to in terms of halting global warming. We know we need policy change. So that is part of what we do, but it's actually a relatively small part.
Well, this is such an exciting program and quite large. Are there other things you'd like to share with our listeners before we conclude our conversation?
Well, I guess I would just invite any of your listeners to find out more about Interfaith Power and Light. Chances are there's an affiliate in your state. We're in 40 states, as I mentioned, and on our website you can see all the states where we are and get a link to your state affiliate. If you don't find an IPL affiliate in your state, you're still welcome to get involved by joining the national campaign. You can sign up for email. You can check out the resources. Almost all of our resources are free online, and you can just find out more about how you can lower your carbon footprint and move towards what we believe is a more positive and more enjoyable relationship with the earth.
Indeed. I find it curious, Susan, that most of the states that do not have affiliates or are not affiliates are lumped up in there's Nevada, the Dakotas, Wyoming, and Montana.
Idaho.
Is there something to that?
Isn't that interesting? I know it's almost like it's contagious having an IPL in your state spreads to other states. I don't know. I'm not sure why that is. We have from some of those states. I know recently from Montana, we've had people who are interested in forming an IPL. Folks in Nevada tend to join California IPL. So far, that's what they've been doing. And a lot of Lutherans, actually, from Nevada have done that. We'd love to have an affiliate in all of those states. So if any of your listeners are the type of people who like to organize and coordinate and have good connections and want to work interfaith on these issues, please contact us. And we have an affiliate services director, Bill Bradley, whose information is on the website, and he'd love to talk with you about how to get an Interfaith Power and Light affiliate started in your state, and if you're in that area, or also Mississippi and Louisiana, we don't have.
Also West Virginia, I didn't see one there.
Oh, we just did. Is it not? Okay, we need to update that. We do have a West Virginia IPL. That is our most recent affiliate. Great people doing really good work there in the heart of coal country.
Yes, indeed. Well, now, we don't want to repeat too many URLs, but you mentioned that you have some you'd like to include in the program. So if you have them, go right ahead, and I'll also put them in the show notes.
Oh, thank you. I mentioned ParisPledge.org, and that is our number one kind of campaign right now, urging congregations and individuals to take that pledge. And then all of the resources that I referenced, you can find pretty easily just by going to interfaithpowerandlight.org, which is our main website.
Very good. Thank you for your good work, Susan.
Thank you so much.
Be well. Peace.
Good talking with you.
You've been listening to my conversation with Susan Stevenson, Executive Director of Interfaith Power and Light. You're welcome to share your thoughts on these subjects. Email a message to feedback@simplelivingworks.org or simplelivingworks@yahoo.com. On our Facebook page or on the Simple Living Works blog. Those addresses are given in the show notes at our website, simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. I recently received some helpful feedback from Mayanne Lorraine. She said, "Gerald, I've been listening to your podcast. It is much more workable than it was. Now I can just click and listen. Can I make a suggestion? I know you are trying to honor others and help people get information, but to me it is like listening to commercials as you wind through all your directions, referrals, and other info that doesn't have to do with the meat of the story. Perhaps if it was at the end of the podcast, it wouldn't be so invasive. Sorry if I sound negative. I would just find it easier listening if I didn't have to wait through all the introductions, etc." Thanks to Mayanne, I have put the basic information about Simple Living Works that has been opening the show now at the end, and inviting new listeners to listen to the end and regulars to say goodbye earlier. In episode 48, I have scheduled an interview with Janet Lewers of SimpleLiving.com and author of the popular books The Simple Living Guide and Simple Loving. It's time to wrap up this episode of Simple Living Works podcast. If you haven't subscribed already, we hope you will now through iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Remember that you can listen to all the episodes of Simple Living Works podcast. They're archived twice. Access them at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. Click preview/backup and choose the episodes you want with or without show notes. Subscriptions to this podcast and to our weekly blog are free, and they keep you current automatically when we post something new. Urge your friends to do the same. Remember to like us on Facebook. You can also subscribe to my other podcast, The Common Good Podcast, in iTunes. We do not solicit or accept donations, nor do we sell anything. All our resources and services are free of charge. We're an all-volunteer organization. Send us your email address to receive the free monthly Simple Living Works e-news. Thanks to the band Earth Mama and to John Pitney for the music on our show. Find details in the show notes at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. Click About. This podcast is covered by the Creative Commons Non-Commercial Attribution Share-Alike license. To learn more about Creative Commons, click on its link on our website homepage. If you're new to Simple Living Works podcast and would like more basic information about Simple Living Works, please listen a little longer. If you're a regular, you may want to say goodbye here. peace. We at Simple Living Works believe that simple living really does work. Voluntary simplicity, choosing to live simpler lives, is a faithful, satisfying, effective, comprehensive lifestyle. It's not a list of rules, not living on the cheap. It avoids fads, convenience, and deprivation. It's so much more than a hobby. We believe in abundance, that there's enough for everyone's needs, not anybody's greed. We follow the saying, live simply that others may simply live, as our closing theme song proclaims. Contemporary faith-based simple living is guided by the 5 life standards of living more with less, the classic by Doris Jansen Longacre, and I've discussed these standards in earlier episodes. The mission of Simple Living Works is equipping people of faith to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly. We extend the mission and resources of the nonprofit organization Alternatives, which served from 1973 to 2011. The 3 parts of our mission are elaborated in text and video. Links are listed in the show notes. We produce a half an hour podcast twice a month, hopefully educational and inspiring for you, your family, and your congregation or group. Until next time, this is Jerry Iverson of Simple Living Works Podcast, wishing you well as we strive to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly.
Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live.